Good evening, everyone. And welcome to Colson Hall. Thank you all for coming. My name is Mark Brazidis. On behalf of our chair, Jim Harms, our associate chair, Tim Sweet, our super and extraordinary everything, Laura Brady, who may be up for coaching the Rutgers basketball team. I hear they're looking. Negotiations are taking place. And Brian, I thought I could outdress you one day, but I decided tonight was not the night. On behalf of our creative writing faculty, Jim Harms, Kevin Oderman, Ethel Morgan Smith, Alyssa High, Glenn Taylor, and tonight's reader, Marianne Salmon, and all our wonderful students, and I see students past and present out there, welcome to tonight's event. I get the easy job of introducing Jim Harms, who will introduce our reader. So please welcome Jim Harms.
All right, thank you, Mark. And thanks, all of you, for coming. It's my honor and pleasure to introduce Marianne Salmon this evening. Marianne's a remarkable poet, a wonderful colleague, and most of all, a close and dear friend. Introducing friends is not as easy as it might seem, because more is on the line, or perhaps more is between the lines. One slip on my part, and Marianne will tell me, and she will tell you, exactly what I meant by that little crack about her poems resembling houses, how each stanza is a room we move through toward the certainty of a door, how each door opens on the promise of blue, or the promise of a promise, which, as the poems remind us, is only worth the weight of a word unless it's fueled by belief. Marianne will tell you that in Italian, stanza means room, so I'm just being clever. Not really all that helpful. And she's right. Cleverness isn't worth much if you don't mean it, and if you're just using it to evade things. But when I try to describe Marianne's poems and why they matter to me, I do mean it. And what the poems do and what they don't do is let us evade. They themselves resist all evasion. And in this, they are brave. But wait, first, here's what we know is true. Marianne Salmon is the author of 5 full-length books of poetry, including this one, My Life in Heaven, which actually isn't just out from Oberlin College Press, it's just about to be out from Oberlin College Press, and which was awarded the 2012 Field Poetry Prize. So if you buy it here tonight, you'll be getting an advance copy. She's also received a Pushcart Prize, the James Wright Poetry Award, and the Emily Dickinson Prize from the Poetry Society of America. Here at WVU, she's received just about every recognition possible for her poetry and her teaching, including the Eberly College and WVU Foundation Outstanding Teaching Awards, the Caberton Award for Excellence in the Teaching of Writing, and the Benedum Distinguished Scholar Award, which is WVU's highest distinction for research. She is also currently the Bolton Professor for Teaching and Mentoring. As we all know, Marianne is the real thing. And those are the things we know are true. But I mentioned belief a little earlier, and that's a very different animal from the verifiable truth. And I mentioned belief in describing what's at stake in these new poems, that belief is a necessary requirement of full participation in life, which is something the poems in this book are arguing passionately for. And since in many ways this is a book of days, a book of seasons, even as it is by all means a book about love, which is the greatest belief of all, and since the poems are ever aware of a self in relation to the world and to the beloved, we are shown the evidence of belief everywhere in this powerful collection, and that evidence is good and honorable and sustained. So, I'm very happy to be able to be a part of this celebration of Marianne's latest book, of utterly unforgettable poems, but also of this celebration of her. So please welcome Mary Ann Salmon.
There's a program on the floor back here. One moment, please. My face is down on the floor. My mother would not be pleased by that. Can you hear me? The microphone's not as lovely as it sometimes is. I don't know what's going on. So thank you for coming. You look very shiny. I was saying to Jim that I wish that there was some better lighting in here. Best reading I ever saw was Madison Smart Bell reading at UVA, where they turned the lights down, and it was really mood lighting, and it was very nice. It suited his work quite a bit. Anyway, I want to start out by reading a poem by one of our middle schoolers. The grad poets and I, a couple weeks ago, went for 2 days to West Preston Middle School and had a pretty amazing experience and a sobering, beautiful time there with the middle schoolers. And sixth grade was our favorite grade. They were the best. And this is my favorite poem. This is by Sidney Davis, and it's called Memories. And I should say also that they had to write about West Virginia and West Virginia landscape and heritage, and we had kind of a loose prompt that we were using with them. And so you'll kind of hear that she's sort of answering some questions from some people. And if you looked at our blog, the department's blog, she's the girl in red who looks like she's scowling. Mm-hmm. She just wanted to get to the typing. She was ready to go. She let me know. This is called Memories by Sidney Davis. It was cold, and my cousin pointed out a tree. In the top of the tree, the branches made a perfect heart. I saw this heart, and I felt like it was so unreal, confusing even. I wondered, how did these branches form a perfect, beautiful heart? The feeling was like Dorothy when she found herself in Oz. It's very good, don't you think? I wish I knew when my pappy shark was with me every step of the way. Like when I was little, he would tell me to talk slower. I would try to tell him everything all at once. Outside, I have an apple tree and I will climb it all the time. I feel like it is my tree because I will go there when I'm sad or just want to be alone. When I turn 16, I want a Mustang GT convertible that is a royal blue. When I think of West Virginia, I wonder, what is it like being in a coal mine? That's a great poem, yeah, from Miss Sidney. Okay. Writing this book was a really beautiful experience for me that has continued on beyond the book as well. Although at a little slower pace, mostly because I'm trying to put the brakes on it a little bit, not have too many poems. But when I wrote the first poem in the book, and these poems really appear in the order that I wrote them. My books are generally like that, but this one definitely is. And as Jim says, there's the seasons and whatnot, and there's some progress. I'm a person who loves progress, or the illusion of progress. Mm-hmm. And so there's some of that. But when I wrote this first poem, it was in spring of 09. And I wrote the poem, and I thought, uh-oh. So we'll start there. Are you ready? Are you okay? Did I ask you how you are? People are often a little wary at poetry readings, as they should be. Oh, and I also want to say that these are very happy poems, so be prepared for that. Even the ones that seem sad or have some heartache in them, that's all fine too. That's part of it, don't you think? I think we were talking about that earlier today in the thesis defense. This is called Let's Be Serious Now. Men's bodies are interesting. One thought or another on a long day. I was being watched, mildly, from afar. The story lay in wait. I'd not been there. The falconer said, "Birds fly from hunger. Careful, all's forgiven." For no reason, long ago reappears, handwritten. The guitar riff I've always wanted to be starts up. Jesus. Let the metaphors commence. I don't think Glenn is here tonight. There's some sickness at home, but he read this poem when we were sitting in the Pittsburgh airport on the way to AWP, and he said to me, You should give that out to students and take out the middle and just give them the first line, men's bodies are interesting, and the ending, Jesus, let the metaphors commence, and say, you get from there to there. That's a great assignment, don't you think? That with my own page, but. We were talking about sharks at dinner, and this poem came from overhearing some kids talking about sharks in Lake Michigan. So, it's called Shark, 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 or whatever it is that you want next. I had been slow to anger. I had been slow to anger. Then the beach curved as promised on the postcard. Nothing to do with anybody. And the children who had none invented danger. Likewise, for once I allowed my mind to wander. Either way, ask me again in 3 months. In answer to your burning question, it was a minor panic, thanks. It was a mirror over the fireplace, and I watched us. It was the 1 a.m. train, I know, because I'm lonely. It was the usual awkwardness you claimed, though I'm not sure, really. Rain in the air, and then rain. And snow back home, the map proves it. 6 a.m., okay, if you want. We'll walk in the dark. Or stay here. Also in the dark. I did a little tiny reading at AWP, and someone said to me afterwards, you read strangely. you read like you're talking to us. I said, thank you. You got your wish, I got mine. A cheer goes up. Then down, of course. Other people deciding what more they want. I'm no lonelier than I've been, maybe less. At church, suffering and ransom, another recap. Is that how we do it, my mother asks, meaning, as usual, God knows what. Today's sun is buttery, is never you mind. My attention span is shot, okay? So bravo. And just for the record, I made it look effortless. Behind the scenes was another story. The photo of this moment would break your heart. Don't, not even for a minute, doubt that's true. That's a very loud clock. You could write that right into a poem. A Very Loud Clock is a great title. You can't have it, I said it. I'm very good about giving people the titles that they say, but you can't have mine. This poem, I just want to say, it quotes from a book. I used to do that a lot. I don't do it quite so much anymore, but this was from a book of, like a kid's science book called Science for Here and Now. It's from 1965. Still totally relevant, of course. And there are a few italicized lines that are from the book, and at the very end, the speaker is addressing herself, just so you know. It's called You Can Thank Me Later. Or now, suggested November, seductive-like and strangely warm. I couldn't get my bearings. Judging by the prevailing mood, I'm guessing this weather will continue for some time, at least privately. Privately is best anyway, in my experience. Take this off, take that. I was wanting some scientific reassurance. In the dark woods, there are no streets. That's the page I opened to, third edition readiness for the future, far and near. But the man is not lost. He can find his way. Sweetheart, the man is not lost. How are you now? That's another great title, actually. You okay? Okay, good. I like a real answer, so you might think about that. It's like church. You have to actually say something. Sometimes poems, the best ones, never get published. I've had many recent and interesting conversations with some graduate students about how surely Jim and I must have all of our work published all the time right away, no problem. That's not the case at all. Rejected all the time, and that's as it should be, right? And this is a poem that's always been a favorite, and it's never was published in a journal, and which just goes to show you, like many things in life, you have to trust yourself, and journals don't know what they're talking about. It's a great poem, you'll see. It's called Cup and String. I'm pressing my ear to a wall of snow. I'm a huntress in this dream, but it's just a dream. In real life, I've never been so patient. Beauty, nature, violence, and love were on my mind. There is no pre-existing story. I just like to watch you. In comparison, fear is small. It is. Those berries and that sunset are doing it in winter. How's that for determination? Satisfaction. Now, are you calling? Good. Hello. Don't make us wait. Pull the string taut. This isn't a toy. Let's talk. Surely some of you have used voice memo on your phones for some urgent purpose. It's a good way to write poems, too, if you're driving, and this poem alludes to that fact. And I also make recordings of all of my poems, as my students know, and listen to them, even if I just have a few lines, and I listen to them repeatedly, and if I can't say those lines or they don't sound right, then they're probably not very good. So this is a poem that alludes to using voice memo. This is the forest. Do you like it? So we were speaking of God always, already. My hand on yours, yours somewhere on me. I thought I had been brave enough for a lifetime, but I'm writing this out loud as I drive. Voice memo to the Ohio sunset, I know you know. Slowly, slowly, slowly is what I learned by rushing. All my outcomes surprising and inevitable. One of last year's last thoughts was, I'm fine. Here's a selfish hope, you're just a little not. New Year's, oh my, arrives, and my, oh help. And the pines offer their usual wonder. Wouldn't it be dreamy? The current goes where it wants, you told me. The flip side of anger is heartache, everybody knows. So let the record show, this sky is a compromise. And let me rest my head again on your chest. What waiting is for, I don't know. I was good. The old-timey advice is say thanks, say goodnight. Also, did you show him you liked him? Oh yeah, I did. Sometimes it's like I'm looking into the past. A little grit from the sea stays in the shell. Or into some sweet future today's blue jay suggests. Beauty and mischief, a space in the hedge. Who wouldn't want to fly into it? Let's make up. Do you have any questions? Last night the workshop was full of questions suddenly. There was a time when just the little faces changed, all the little faces that look at me in our nearly 4-hour workshop that we had last night. I sometimes think they don't quite believe me, things that I tell them. Okay. I wrote this poem when I was at a hotel in Kent, Ohio, right before reading. And I did take a picture of myself in the hotel mirror, so just so you know. It was actually between a reading and having been to visit a class or two. And it's great to visit other people's classes because you can just say any old thing you want. And she's like, see ya, and let the teacher clean up after that. In your own classes, you have to think about what you might have to say the next time. This is called Stupidity, Crabbiness, Moorings, and Love. One possible Jesus was Jesus, stubbornly. For argument's sake, the clouds moved very fast. Good show, I wanted to say. The clarity is inside you, is what I said instead. The professor and students nodded yes and no. Like when your mouth opened against mine. Keats was awfully young when he wrote those letters. I am frequently reminded. What can I say? Seduction circa 1819 still sounds good. The worst of it is mostly private. Of what? I asked myself. Then snapped a photo in the hotel mirror. By the way, just so you know, I'm going to read you a few more poems from this book and then some newer poems, skipping ahead to about like the last year or so, since many of you heard me read last spring at the Benedum and heard sort of that series of poems. We'll move ahead in time, see how things are coming along. This is called She Named It Beauty. So it got easier when I stopped believing everything I thought and took a drive just because that might feel good. Even the new loneliness was pretty nice and calmed me, like the cherry blossoms when they fell. I'd been unhappy here and there, I realized, which set me gently down. And ordering a bouquet for someone else, I knew what I'd prefer. The actual flowers could come later. There is no safety. Your heart may break. Mine may. I think all art is about this. Perfection never did much interest me, but I have to ask, are you seeing this sunset? Rebecca Doverspeck and I have been emailing a little bit about many things, but among them, how sometimes memories and things that you thought were over aren't quite, and come back a little bit, and in not a very pleasant way. And this is a poem kind of about that sensation of thinking back and not quite having to go there, but realizing you haven't been quite let go yet either. It's called Forever and Ever and Ever. A little warning bell goes off inside where what's good begins. I go back a year. No, I can't, thank God. Tenderness says there's just a little missing. Don't fret. Like the leaf with the bite out of it. Someone won't go hungry. Now I'm moving rapidly through the memory. Sometimes I screamed into the center or lay awake all night. I got what I came for is a sentence about leaving. For the longest time, I mostly stayed put. This has always been one of my favorite poems in the manuscript, or in the book, rather. I never say book until it's a physical thing. I never believe it till it's in my house. But it's in my house now, so. I like this poem because it's about going to Petco and looking at kittens. It was what it was. And then it's a miracle, or the job of a miracle, a good time to grow up. How exciting. Now the sound of it is your breath at my neck. The picture book of it is a real page turner. Happiness isn't begged for, sweetheart. That's my hand on your lap. The kittens were having the time of their lives. The glass reflected us as we were, only and exactly. This is the last poem I'm going to read to you from this book. This is the title poem that I wrote, Patrick, up at Glen Lake, one of the times that I was there. I think you were there, too. And I was staying in a little cabin, a little house, and there were many interesting things in it. And yeah, I was thinking about all my usual stuff. This is called My Life in Heaven. This is a true account, beginning now. Here's a birch basket, tens of feathers, none of which will ever belong again. This is like that, only more so. Once I was a little girl who tried to write it. Now I do 20 years worth of looking every afternoon. Like the insect that shed its before on the sand and unstuck its wings, two pairs. Time can't be wasted. Some changes are forever. The lake's three greens know, and its darker churning and its eyelet edge. Given the chance, I'd wear that to meet you. So now we're going to move ahead in time a little bit. And as many of you know, I make little chapbooks for myself of every 3 or 4 months worth of writing. And, you know, just make 3 or 4 copies of them and just to see what's what and to think about what poems are really going to make it. You know, you write a lot more than what makes it, and that's good to know about and to be okay with, too. So, I need my notes still. So now, those poems ended in, it was from April or May or so of 2009 to maybe August of 2010. That's a pretty fast book, and I wrote a lot more poems than are in the book. And so now we're kind of moving ahead, and this is, we're into 2011 a little bit here. And this is the poem that I think will probably be the title poem of the next book, but one doesn't like to think about such things quite too much, so I should be quiet about that. It's called All the Time in the World. Oh, and by the way, I should also say that in the poem, it also took place, I wrote the poem when I was in northern Michigan at a place called Glen Lake that Patrick and I know really well, and I was kayaking in the lake when I had got some of the lines of the poem, so I headed ashore, wouldn't you? I mean, I didn't have my phone with me for voice memo. All the time in the world. A wind makes quick work of the lake. This is clarity. Likewise, what I put myself through long ago interests me now. The extra sadness. I paddle a little, then stop to choose the house with the picture window. The future is irresistible, they say. Later, sleepless, I allow myself to think of you that way. It's only natural to wonder. Long Sunday. It's one thing to be the space for heartache, another to invent it. The two fawns said, don't. Then, for a while, some wind took my attention, and the female cardinal who probably wasn't lost. In the illustrated forest, the treetops look sooty, but that's not the worry. I never can remember the point of fairy tales. Some people thrive on distraction. What is the nature of my fear? I was almost there, not quite. Charity, I didn't see you originally. I didn't read my October-ish poem. Charity once said to me, men are just like October. And I said, I know. It's a beautiful month. And long, too. She meant it as a bad thing, but I turned it around for her. Okay. These poems are from spring 2012. This is called Nearby. Children's voices rise over the hill at dusk, and a particular moon everyone is waiting for. A little later, I watch you, inside, turn a page slowly. The same soft light that surrounds you fills me. How about if we say ready when we're ready, one serious child had suggested to another. Imagining into any opening is a kind of fame. Providing the space also reveals itself in time. Who's Yesterday? My dad said this title, apropos of we were talking about some restaurant or something that was giving, you know, prices today, you know, the prices of yesterday today. And my dad said, who's yesterday? He wanted them to be his yesterday's prices, obviously. Who's yesterday? The morning neighborhood smells of campfires, leftover dream energy. The natural world, too, is contractual. The willow and the drought, the moment-to-moment sky. Sometimes I'm left wondering just how thought translates into action. This is the present tense, where we live and move. Otherwise, isn't nearly so powerful. Still, out of longing, I make a fist to see the mechanism. Then, educated, I keep my beauty open. For years to come. There's a lot of time in these poems, and many of them I wrote right before teaching last summer's grad class on the lyric poem, which we found out that lyric poems are all about time. And first I was like, no, they're not. And then I was like, wait a minute, I think they are. For years to come. Walking in the dawn fog, considering grief, especially the grief of what others desire on our behalf. The long distance of that, the delicate burden. When did I give up the idea I began with? I recall learning endurance, my face in that mirror. Saints are famous for what they have renounced. That's not what I mean or need. The rose bushes I planted, will they be the thing? Sometimes loneliness overcomes me. Childhood, too, what was that all about? The interior life is life. The roses live there. I notice as many times a day as it takes. Three more poems. These are kind of moving into current times a little bit. And some more time in the title. This is called For All Time. 3 days I watch the hurt come and go, then gentleness come. All the while I'm more beautiful than I've ever been. Everything expresses itself. Morning frost makes a second poem of the grass and of my breath for a moment. Evenings I lie on the floor to think it over. I want you above me. You still okay? It's also a pretty good title. It's called The Hardest Part is Next. But I don't fear that, not being there yet. Every time I doubt, deer come along. And that one night, the little gray fox. Sometimes I do wonder where I'll live, then trace the muscles of your forearm. Surrender assumes a what or whom. Receptivity is my secret power. And this last poem is very new, and I want to thank you so much for listening. So. Attentively, like sixth graders even, one might say. When I asked them how they were, they answered in unison. You don't get that in your undergraduate workshops very often. This is called Might As Well Start at the Beginning. Wisdom is, there's beauty in shyness. I've lived there. Now I want to tell you everything, but just you.
When I can't sleep, I dream alongside your easy yeses. When I can, my dream is a walk in the woods. My oldest self grew in a yard, quiet, save for the birds. So tenderness is not lost on me, not ever. Love, I didn't know we could. Could what? Just could. Thank you so much.